Okay, I hope everybody's doing really well. So we're at this very climactic moment where Yonatan is stays right in between. His father on the one hand, and he's trying to, let's say, show honor to his father, show some loyalty. On the other hand, his father is not well. And he has this very deep bond with his brother-in-law, with David. And it's something that his father doesn't really understand, as we'll see today, because Yonatan's aspirations towards the throne really depend on David not being in the picture. And so that becomes sort of the central tension that we'll go over tonight. And just to review, we talked about it last week. You know, this is not the first time that Yonatan and Shaul have discussed David. In the last chapter, just reprinted it in case you're interested, you know, in looking, take a look with me right here. Vaydaber Shaul Yonatan Benovel Kolavadav Lehamidet David. And Shaul had already confided in Yonatan and in all of his close lieutenants that he wants to kill David. And Yehonatan ben Shaul, despite the fact that he's Shaul's son, which the Navi is emphasizing for us, chafetz b'David ma'od, right? That he has this very deep and intensive bond with David, and Yonatan lets David know, you know, as we spoke about last week, that, you know, his father is plotting, and he says, I'm going to talk to my father for you, and Yonatan basically goes and he confronts his father, and he says, you know, what did David ever do to you? On the contrary, right? He's been nothing but a blessing for you and for the Jewish people, and he defeated Goliath, so on and so forth. And Shaul says, you're right. You're right. You know, I was on the wrong path. I'm not going to harm David. And then again, you know, the path continues and the cycle repeats itself, so to speak. And where we left things off last week is Yonatan and David, they've come up with a plan. And the plan revolves around the field. I think we observed last week that the field is always this place where we find David, right? That David, you know, was found in the field. He was with the sheep in the field originally. So David's going to hide there in the field. And Yonatan has developed a plan where David's not going to be at the Rosh Chodesh celebration. And there's going to be some excuse. And he's going to tell Shaul, anybody remember what he's going to tell him? Where is David? He's at the Yankee game. Where is he? He's with his family. And based on the reaction, if Shaul reacts very negatively, let's say that, so then Yonatan's going to go out into the field and he's going to start firing arrows. And if he says to the Na'ar, to his aide-de-camp, if he says to him, Halo hachitzim mimcha v'hala, that the arrows are beyond you, you have to go further, so that's a sign to David that he's got to go further, he's got to run. But if he says, Halo achitzim imcha v'hena, that the arrows are nigh, they're nearer than where you are, you come back for the arrows, so that's a message to David. And we noted last week, just to review one final point, that Yonatan does all of this with full knowledge that sparing David's life means that David will be king and that he will not be king. And so he makes David take this oath, which is to say that Yonatan and David's family will always be loyal to each other, even though the natural course of affairs would be for them to be at war with each other, right? Because, you know, one dynasty replacing the other, the tradition in the ancient world would have been to annihilate the previous dynasty. So David and Yonatan make this oath to each other, and that's where we've left things off. Now, does anybody happen to remember, for extra credit, what the excuse will be and what its significance is? So David, again, is going to be reported to be where? He's actually hiding in the field. But Shaul is going to pretend that David is where?
His family.
He's with his family in? Where is David's family from? Anybody remember? From Beit Lechem. Okay, very good. So he's going to be in Eretz Yehuda with his family, and that's the plan. Okay. So let's take a look inside. Let's read the psukim together. This again is the Haftorah for Erev Rosh Chodesh, so the psukim should be relatively familiar towards the bottom of the first page. Vayisater David basadeh, the David hides in the field, Vayiha Chodesh, and it comes Rosh Chodesh, Vayishav HaMelech al-Halacham l'Achol,
And Shaul, right, sits down to eat the festive meal. There are some people thought that they had actual kachim, actual korbanos. There are some people that felt that because it was kind of a festive, almost Yom Tov-like meal, that people used to only come if they were ritually pure, if they were tahor. We'll see that plays a factor in just a second. Vayishav ha-melech al-moshavo kepam v'pam al-moshav akir. So Shaul sits at the head of the table against the wall. Vayakom Yehonatan. So Yehonatan gets up from being next to his father. All the commentaries explain that since they used to recline, there's images of the Greeks in poses, something like that, so they used to recline. It wasn't considered respectful for the son to be reclining right next to his father. So Yehonatan basically goes one seat down. Vayeshev Avner. Avner was, remember, the chief of staff, the head of the army. So Avner positions himself in between Shaul and Yehonatan. So we have the inner circle. We have Shaul, we have Yehonatan, and we have Avner right in the middle. Vayeshev Avner mitzad Shaul, vayipakeid mekom David. But whose seat is empty? Of course, David's seat is empty. V'lo diver Shaul me'uma, Shaul does not say anything. Vayomahu ki amar mikrabu bilti tahorhu ki lo tahor. It must be that he didn't come because he's tameh, he's ritually impure. And again, even though technically speaking, this isn't like the Beis HaMikdash or something where you wouldn't be allowed to go if you were tameh, but again, there are different theories. Maybe they did have some korbanos that they were eating the meat of, like a korban shlamim. Maybe they were practicing something called chulin al taras hakodesh, or certain people to achieve a higher spiritual level will only eat food when they themselves are pure, even if it doesn't happen to be kachim. There are different ideas. I might suggest that because, again, it's like a festive meal, like they treated Rosh Chodesh like it was a Yom Tov. So there is a principle, Chayav Adam Yitar Atzmo Baregel, that a person should purify themselves on Yom Tov. So again, whatever it was, something along those lines. So Shaul thinks nothing of it. David didn't show up on day one. Vahim Machorat, HaChodesh HaShinit, on the second day of the month, Vayifakeid Mekom David, and David is still not there. So Shaul now says something. Vayomer Shaul Yehonatan binno. Notice the text going out of its way to say again that Yehonatan is Shaul's son. We know that. That's not for, to give us information, but it's to provide the context. Okay. Madua lo ba ben Yishai gam tamol gam hayom el halacha. Why did the son of Yishai come both today and yesterday to the meal? Now it's interesting. He doesn't call him David. What does he call him? Ben Yishai. Now, why is that? Why is that important?
It stresses his family.
Very good. Okay, so what Eva's pointing out is he's not from this family, right? You, Yehonatan, of course,
belong here.
You are the crown prince, right? So it's setting up this tension where Yehonatan has to choose. You know, whose side are you on? Ben Yishai, their family over there, or are you with our family with us? Remember, this is exactly the trap that Yehonatan has set up for his father. Because what's the excuse going to be that where is David? With his family. Right? Okay, so that's the tension here. Question of their family versus our family, them versus us. Vayan Yehonatan et Shaul nishol nishol David. Oh, I forgot to mention Dad. Yeah, David asked me a while ago. Ad Beit Lachem, David said he had to go home. Vayomer shalcheinina ki zevach mishpacha lanu ba'ir v'hu tziva li achi. And, you know, David said that my eldest brother told me I need to come home, you know, come home for Yantif. You know, everybody's getting together, all the siblings. V'atali matzati chen be'inachem altana v'eret achai alkei lovar shulchan amal. So Yonatan says, okay, you know, David, I forgot to tell you. David asked me about it, it's an excuse to absent. And Shaul flies into a rage unlike any other. Vayichar af Shaul b'Yehonatan, and Shaul becomes incensed. Vayomer lo, this is an R-rated chapter, I have to say. Ben avah hamarduk, let's put it nicely, son of a rebellious woman. Halo yadati, do you think that I'm a fool? Ki bocher ata leben Yishai, levoshtecha, to your humiliation, and of course to the disgrace of your mother's erva, which again, the very graphic term, but Shaul is really letting Yonatan, his son, have. He says, don't you think that I get what you're doing? That you're protecting David from me? And it's to your disgrace, to your mother's disgrace. Ki chol hayamin, asher ben Yishai chai al adama. Because the reality is, says Shaul, lo tikon atal malchutecha, you will never have a firm reign, such as David's charisma, such as David's popularity amongst the people. Now go and get him. I know you're hiding him somewhere. I'm going to kill him. So again, unlike last chapter, chapter 19, where in Shaul, when he's told by Yonatan, basically, you know, what did David ever do to you? And Shaul says, you're right, and I'm going to back down, I'm going to back off, there's no reason to harm him. Now Shaul is totally entrenched. He's crossed his own personal Rubicon, and as far as he's concerned, David is a dead man walking. And Yonatan has to choose. Yonatan is not going to be able to keep this up anymore. He's either going to have to be Shaul's loyal son, or he's going to have to be David's friend, but he can't play this double game anymore. So let's see Yonatan's reaction. Vayam Yonatan et Shaul aviv. He answers Shaul, his father. Again, notice that the text constantly goes out of its way to call Yonatan Shaul's son and Shaul Yonatan's father. That's part of the whole pathos and the tragedy of this. And it's also part of what makes Yonatan remarkable, because he's trying as best as he can to be a good and respectful son, even though he knows his father is compromised at this point. He knows his father is no longer well. Mayan Yonatan et Shaul aviv, vayomer lav, lama yumat, why should he die? Me'asa, what did he ever do? What is the target? And Shaul picks up the spear to throw it at Yonatan. Vayeda Yonatan, and Yonatan knew at that point, ki chalahi mim aviv v'hamid et David. At that point, he sees that his father is irrevocably gone down this path where he is going to try to kill him. Now, when Shaul lifts up the chanit, the spear, where have we seen this before? Exactly right. So what's the symbolism here? If he's now picking up the spear to throw it at Yonatan.
He's placing Yonatan in his mind.
Exactly. He's saying, as far as he's concerned, Yonatan, you're on David's side. And just like I take the spear against, you know, just like I take the spear against David, I'll take the spear against you. Vayakom Yonatan, so Yonatan gets up, Me'im HaShulchan Bachori Af. And he gets up in this, he's terribly angry. He doesn't eat anything that day for two reasons. Kin etzav el David, he's very upset about what happened to David. And second of all, kihi chlimo aviv, because his father had humiliated him. His father had done these terrible things. His father had threatened him with violence. His father had, you know, embarrassed him. Kin etzav el David. So if you think about it, if the Navi is telling us that Yonatan can't bring himself to even eat anything that day for two reasons. Again, one of them is, you know, he feels terrible about what's going to happen to that David is now going to be basically a refugee, Netzav al David. The second one is that his father humiliated him. What's significant about the sequencing?
He can't afford to save it himself.
That's right. That's exactly right. He puts that. For Yonatan, it's a greater tragedy. Not the fact that his father just did this to him, which you would think would have been at the forefront of his mind, but the greater tragedy here is what this means for David. Remember last week we talked about the concept of, you know, ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, to love somebody like you would love yourself. And we talked about that expression last week, ahavat nafsho ahivo, that Yonatan and David, their love and loyalty to each other was really, you know, it surpassed what you might normally expect, and it really became for Yonatan that he loved David just the way that he would love himself. And he wanted for David anything that he would want for himself. So notice here, it didn't even go beyond that. transcends that and becomes a story about how Yonatan is more concerned for David than he is for himself. And that, again, reminds us of the statement to the rabbis that there were three great humble figures in all of Jewish history, and Yonatan was one of them.
Okay.
So Yonatan has to now make good on his promise. He's got to signal David that David is in deep trouble. David is in mortal danger. He's going to have to go out into the field, and they're going to do the sign with the arrows. Remember, he's going to shoot the arrows, and what's he going to say? He's going to say that. Exactly. Hello, achitzim, mincha v'hala. That the arrow is beyond you, and that's a sign that David, lech kishilachacha Hashem, God is the one that sent you. V'hiv ha-boker, v'yitzei yonatan ha-sadeh l'moed David, v'na'ar katoni moed. There's just a small na'ar there. V'yomer l'na'aral, and so Yonatan says to his na'ar, Roots, I want you to run, when I shoot the arrows, mitzana, erachitzim asher nochim orea, hana'arat, so that the kid starts running, v'hu yara achetzi v'haviro. And Yonatan fires an arrow far into the distance. V'yavo anar mikom achetzi asher yara Yonatan, and the child comes, young teenager, I guess, comes to approximately the area where Yonatan has shot the arrow. Vayikra Yonatan achorei hana'ar, and Yonatan calls out in a very loud, booming voice, Vayomer, halo hachetzi, mimcha v'hala. And it's ringing out across the field. You can hear it if you're anywhere in distance. Halo hachetzi, mimcha v'hala. The arrow is beyond you. And Yonatan comes to the Nar, calls to the Nar, and he says, "No, no, no, don't stand there." Vayilakev Nar Yonatan el Achitzim, vayavo el Adonav, and the Nar Yonatan collects the arrows and he comes back to Yonatan. V'hanar lo yada meuma, the Nar does not know anything. Now that's the second time in this parak that we've had the term Me'uma. Who can think of where that word comes up in the Chumash? It's a very important word, and it doesn't come up very often at all. Okay, we actually just had it in the Torah reading. It's that Dr. Horst, isn't it? Very, very good. So, and in the Akedah it says, Al tishlach yadcha el hana'ar ve'al ta'aslo Me'uma. When Avram is told not to harm Yonatan, he's told not only don't kill him, but don't do a thing to him. Don't do anything. Now, that's an important word. Why is that an important word in this context? Again, the Akedah is the paradigmatic father-son moment. But what is Yonatan effectively doing here? In employing this word, Shmuel Hanavi is saying what about? He's taking us back to that moment with Avram and Yitzchak, by Yochush Nehem Yachdav, when the father and son were on the same page. What's significant about that word in this context is what's Yonatan doing to his father?
He's not with him.
He's undermining his father. Right? Now again, Yonatan is doing the right thing. If your father wants to murder somebody, you shouldn't go along with it. Right? But it's a very painful moment for Yonatan because it means that he has to, and he knows this, he has to betray his father. He has to literally undermine his father.
What's exactly?
It means anything. Hanar lo yadam mu'uma. The Na'ar knew nothing of what was really going on. As far as he was concerned, they were just going out shooting arrows. He had no idea, you know, what the real moment was all about. This was something that only David and Yonatan really understood. V'hanar lo yadam mu'uma. Ach, Yonatan and David yadu et hadavar, the only two who knew what was really transpiring. So the Nar looked very innocent, shooting arrows, collecting arrows, the arrows are here, the arrows are there, come after the arrows. David and Yonatan understood. Vayitain Yonatan et kilav el hanar, so Yonatan starts handing his bow and arrow, his quiver, his sword, presumably some of his other materiel to the Na'ar. Vayomer lo lech Havei ha'ir, I want you to bring these back to the city. Hana'ar ba, so the child, he goes back basically to the town. Yonatan remains in the field. V'David, and David comes out of hiding for just a moment. Kam me'itza ha'negev. Vayipola pav arza vayishtachu shalosh pamim. And David, in gratitude to Yonatan for signaling to him the mortal danger, for signaling to him that he's going to now have to run for his life, David bows symbolically to Yonatan three times. Vayishku ish et re'ehu, and they kiss again, each one his re'a, his friend, yahavta le're'a pav shalom. Vayishku ish et re'ehu, they both break down crying. They recognize the significance of this moment. They understand they'll likely never see each other again. David is going to have to go into hiding. Yonatan is going to have to return to the palace. Yonatan understands that somehow his father is going to come to an end. His father's dynasty is not going to survive. He assumes that that could mean that for him, he's probably going to die as well. David will have to live, will have to carry on the monarchy. David will have to carry on the leadership of the Jewish people. It's a very powerful moment. They both cry. Ah, David Gil. David cried more. And David cried more because he understood what Yonatan was sacrificing. Yonatan was sacrificing his opportunity, of course, to be king himself. Yonatan was sacrificing, in all likelihood, his life, because he was going to have to go back to his father. He was not going to be able to extract himself from his father's failures, his father's machinations. And David understood what this meant for Yonatan, just as Yonatan understood exactly what this meant for David. Vayomer Yehonatan le David, lech le shalom. And Yonatan says to David, I want you to go in peace. Asher nishbanu shneinu anachnu, because the two of us, and the two of us alone, because nobody else knew of this. Even people who were physically present, like the Na'ar, really did not understand the significance of what was going on. They were there, but they really weren't there, right? This was a moment that was shared only by Yonatan and David. Asher nishbanu shneinu anachnu b'shem Hashem, for we have taken an oath in God's name, l'mor, Hashem yihyeh b'ni uveinecha, Uvein Zari, Uvein Zaracha ad Olam. God will be between you and I, says Yonatan to David. We'll always be loyal to each other. But even more importantly, your descendants and my descendants forever, we will always be loyal to one another. Yonatan, in this moment, which closes a chapter, Yonatan basically is able to put his face totally forward towards the future. And his whatever is going to become of me, and the future does not look particularly bright for Yonatan, his father, and he's about to go back to his last scene, holding a spear, trying to kill him. But even more importantly, his father's not well. His father's not going to be making good decisions. He's attached to his father. Whatever his father gets caught up in, he's going to get caught up in. You can already see here foreshadowed that Yonatan is going to die at his father's side, which is exactly what will happen. So what is Yonatan concerned about? He says, God is going to be between you and I, Hashem yihyeh b'ni u'b'necha. But more importantly, this is what's critical to focus on, v'ein zar'i u'vein zar'acha ad olam, between my descendants and your descendants forever. He puts his face forward towards the future. And Yonatan, it's such a powerful moment where Yonatan is able to say what very few people can really ever do in their life, and to say, it's not really about me right now. But let's think towards the future. Let's see the big picture. May there always be between peace between my family and between your family, even if it's God's will that your family take over the monarchy. Let there not be a war between our families. And here Yonatan creates a model, almost unlike anything else we have in Tanakh, which starts, of course, with the story of Cain and Hevel and rivalry and people looking for power and for glory. And we have it with Yaakov and Esav and Yosef and the brothers. And you know, there's always, right, strife and, you know, Korach, and everybody's out for power, everybody's out for themselves, and everybody wants to be in charge, and that's kind of the nature of people. And here you have somebody who's able to not only give up an opportunity for power to be the king, but here you have Yonatan, somebody who's able to look deep into the future. He's able to say, okay, God has a plan for the Jewish people, and that plan runs through David. He can see that clearly. And what he's able to do is to say, well, if that's the case, then what is it that I would hope for? Well, I would hope for peace for the future. I would hope that there would not be strife between our families, which again, it can't be taken for granted, because when one dynasty comes in to replace another dynasty, so, you know, there's usually bloodshed. Eva?
Do we know anything about Jonathan's children?
Yes, we'll learn a lot about them. They're going to be a big part of the story going forward. So far, we don't.
It's mentioned by the short dragon.
Yeah, so we're gonna go into great detail on that. That is going to become, as you would imagine, a central focus for David. And Eva was wondering, what do we learn about Yonatan's family? So I said, that's going to be a central focus. Because even after Yonatan is no longer in the scene, he's going to be killed next to his father, fighting to the last bullet, so to speak, with his father against the Plishtim. You could already see the handwriting on the wall. Clearly here, Yonatan understands that if he's going back to his father, things are not going to end well for his father. But Yonatan's family is going to go on, and that's going to be kind of a tragic story in its own right. And for David, you can imagine the importance of this, because he never forgets, he never can forget what it is that Yonatan did for him in terms of saving his life and in terms of allowing, remember this is the image of Machar Chodesh we spoke about last week, that the moon of the dynasty of Shaul is waning and the moon of David is just beginning to emerge, symbolizing a new dynasty, a new moment for the Jewish people. So here again, I think this is really the most critical message to take home. In life, it's so enticing in a moment for people to get really wrapped up in what they sense is, you know, their own sense of prestige, their own sense of self, their own sense of, you know, wanting to advance. And there's something kind of natural about that, but there's also something very blinding about that, because it prevents us from seeing the big picture or seeing maybe what's best overall, where we can only think about ourselves. And you know, lest we think that it's kind of impossible to think that you'd say, oh, well, that's just the way people are. Well, you have to take a step back and say, no, that's the way most people are. But this story could have never happened without a Yonatan, without somebody who was willing to sacrifice himself in his own position. And so Yonatan is in one sense, this story is about him foregoing power and honor. But it's like, you know, that old expression that Chazal had, you know, Ezehu mechubad, who's the truly honored one, ha mechabedet abriyot, the one who honors the other one. And again, Chazal would say, anybody who runs away from kavod, komi shaboreach min ha-kavod, ha-kavod boreach ha-korah, the honor chases after that person. You can't read these chapters without thinking, what an incredible person that Yonatan was, to be able to do this and to create the framework, to create the foundation upon which Malchus Beis David, the monarchy of the house of David, you know, will exist and, you know, become part of the tapestry of Jewish history to this very day. Of course, that's what we look to when we think about the ultimate redemption. So again, the unsung hero, as I would put it, of Malchus Beis David is Yonatan. And that's an amazing position for him to have in Jewish history. And in that way, you know, Yonatan takes his place amongst the great figures of Jewish history. The great figures of Jewish history. Because specifically he's really able to get past himself. And it challenges all of us to think, you know, how can this manifest itself in our own lives? And people think from their own point of view and what's good for me. Something like that's the message that society reinforces all the time, right? Like, you know, we're always taught, you know, by the general culture to think about, you know, what's in it for me? How can we advance ourselves? This and that, right? But Yonatan's story is not about that. It's not about learning to think for yourself. It's about learning to think. Remember, it says, why didn't Yonatan eat that day? Well, he was really upset about what his father did to him, but he was even more upset about what this meant for David. He can see that David is going to have a very tough road before things clear. And he's not wrong. Because starting next week, starting next chapter, we're going to see what it's like for David to be a total refugee. Because, you know, the sad truth of David's life, here they're telling the story that, oh, David's at home with his family, you know. But David's got nobody, right? That family was always estranged from him. We saw that multiple times in terms of his own father, his own brothers, and how they treat him. Now David has been rejected by the family that he married into, by Shaul, right? And if you recall, last week we were discussing it, you know, when Michal lets him down the window, and Shaul says, you know, how could you do this to me? How could you let my enemy go? And she says, well, he threatened to kill me. You know, Michal has now, you know, sort of aligned herself with Shaul against David. So David doesn't have any home to go back to. So Yonatan sees that also. He sees what the road looks like in the short term for David. And that's a very difficult road as well. So again, Lech l'shalom, David, may you go in peace. He understands very well that, at least in the short term, it's very unlikely that there's going to be actual peace for David. And yet this is, you know, from this moment on, we're going to see the unwinding of the house of Shaul, David as a refugee, all the way until the end of Sefer Shmuel. So we're in for a bumpy ride from this point on, but we have to appreciate this moment while we have it. Because this is a moment, just a second, kind of, this moment, again, this moment of Yonatan, this moment of a person being able to see the big picture, a person being able to see past themselves into the future. You know, may there be peace between our houses, generations into the future. This is a very special moment in Jewish history. It's a very special moment in Sefer Shmuel. And from this point on, the next 10 chapters or so, till the end of what we call Sefer Shmuel Aleph, really halfway through the halfway point of Sefer Shmuel, this is kind of the high point in terms of a moral moment. And now we're going to see things really fall apart in terms of the house of Shaul. We're going to see David hanging on by a thread until it all comes crashing down and comes to a head. And it's going to be about 16, 17 chapters till we're well into the Shmuel Bet, till we get any sense of stability again with David actually becoming the king over the Jewish people. So again, from this point on, we're going to be in a very, very challenging period in Jewish history. The unraveling of the house of Shaul, the very, very difficult, arduous path that David has to now go through before he's able to become king over all of Israel, the civil war that the Jewish people are going to go through. We're talking about very significant challenges over the course of the next 15 chapters or so. So let's try to appreciate tonight for what it was, a beautiful moment when Yonatan is able to say to David, Lech l'shalom, and they embrace, they see each other for a last time, a very significant moment. Yeah, Sigi, go ahead.
You just answered the question that I was going to ask.